WSBTRadio.com presents a fan's perspective on Notre Dame sports. This is Dome and Domer.
Hey, Irish fans, you're listening to Dome and Domer, an online conversation about Notre Dame football from a fan's perspective. I'm Mike Sullivan, and joining me, Ed Sullivan and Mike Coffey from ND Nation. And we're going to take about 15 minutes to talk a little bit more about the Notre Dame-Boston College game and the broader view of college football this season. And we'll touch a little bit on Notre Dame basketball. It's getting to be that time of year. If you have any questions or comments, you can make a post them on our website, domeanddomer.com, or you can send us an email, info@domeanddomer. Well, some breaking news from the Notre Dame football program today. Matt Carafell, sophomore offensive lineman, left the program last week to go home to Minnesota, think about his future, and it's official, he won't be returning back to the football program. Here's a kid that was highly recruited, top 50 recruit, and started three games this year. So that's certainly not good news, but, you know, how damaging is that to perception, the overall program, you know, the guys, the team we put on the field, as well as recruits? You guys have any thoughts on that?
Well, you know, it doesn't help. It's yet another chink this year in our armor. It doesn't help perception-wise. I'm sure it doesn't help on the field either. There's a reason that he was vying for a starting position, even though he may have lost that. That happens a lot through the course of the season. People move up and down the depth chart. He may have had some bad games. He may have found himself. I think it hurts, and it hurts in our perception. Whether there's any real reality to, is there a problem, has Charlie lost his team? That's what friends are emailing me. Has Charlie lost his team?
Yeah, I certainly don't think it's an indication of that. I mean, these things do tend to happen.
No, I agree, but I think you have to look at the circumstances where he was vying for a starting position, and yet the minute he loses that starting position, he goes so far as to leave the team. That seems to me to be a really drastic response to losing your starting position. And to be honest, I mean, I'm not really in the business of, like, trying to cut players down or anything like that. But if that's how you're going to react to being moved out of a starting position, I'm not sure I want you on my team.
No, I think that's a legit point. I mean, that's the first thing I think of, too. That's his reaction to losing his starting position. But I think we have to acknowledge this is not good. It's not a good thing. It makes it's one fewer person on the depth chart. It's another body we've lost, and the perception issue.
It's problematic.
I agree it's a problematic perception. I would amend that, though, to say it's not optimal as opposed to not good. I mean, if I'm going to have someone whose mental state is such that he's going to leave the team as soon as he doesn't start anymore, is he really bringing a lot to the team when he plays?
Right.
Is he
right.
Really mentally
focused? Yeah, you obviously want guys, either you're with us or you're not, you know, get on the train and let's go. And so from that standpoint, attrition sometimes is a really good thing for a program. And we don't know the behind-the-scenes stuff that's going on personally with this kid or chemistry on the team or whatever. But in a season where you're 1-6, it looks bad. Now, Mike Coffey, you made a real good point about these types of things in the pre-internet days.
Yes, in the days before the internet brought us every possible nuance of things that happened, players would go home to think about things. I mean, not every year, but they were definitely known to happen. I think Tony Brooks took a weekend off to ponder his future, and it always usually happens in the sophomore year because that's the year where it's your really last chance to change your mind, because if you transfer as a sophomore, you'll sit out as a junior and still get 2 years to play and have an effect.
And in this particular sophomore class, I think there's some circumstances at work here. It was a very big class in terms of numbers, highly regarded class, ranked as high as fifth, between fifth and eighth. And if you look at some, there was some interesting stuff on ND Nation, Mike Coffey, that I saw. If you look at some of the top schools in the sophomore class, how those schools ranked in terms of recruiting, all of the top four have significant attrition, just like Notre Dame. If you brought in a class of 25-plus guys, you're going to lose some kids. SC has lost six kids out of that class already.
And all of them are 3- and 4-star kids. Florida's lost four of them, one of whom is a 5-star wide receiver. Texas has lost 5 kids.
Georgia's lost
3 or 4. When you have, as I said, sophomores are the most vulnerable to want to move because they're the ones, they can see the depth chart ahead of them. They know who's coming in the recruiting class.
Yeah, now that's a really good point. And this information about what's going on in other schools is really critical. And you notice that you don't hear about this at other places as much. Maybe people in the local media there are talking about it. I don't know. But the fact is, comparing us and attrition is the key distinction. And we might get all wrapped up with what's happening at Notre Dame. Oh, my God, Charlie's lost the team. But if you pull the lens back a little bit and you see what's happening at other places and they're having the same issues,
sure,
that really helps put it in perspective.
And again,
there's
one other thing
that, Mike Coffey, you make a lot of great points. The only point I disagree with is you said maybe that didn't happen every year. I think it happened every year. When I played at Villanova, there was always a kid, every year, that some kid who kind of, I mean, these are kids, and it happens in college. You know, you lose your head a little bit. You need to go sort things out. Something's going on at home. You just get depressed during the middle of a tough season. It happens every year, except now every single thing is plastered all over the media.
Traveling the internet at the speed of sound or light or whatever.
Yeah, exactly. Now, in terms of the depth issue, that's the real concern.
Yes.
You know, the offensive line, there not a lot of experienced guys there to begin with. You take a guy now who started three games. You know, competition is what is going to make everybody better, pushing them at practice. And now there's another guy out of the mix. And that worries me in terms of overall the depth of the team. We've commented on the number of scholarship players on this team, how we're short, and the implications of that.
Yes.
So this cycle of having to bring in big class to get up to speed it bothers me, because when you bring in 25, 26 guys, how can you keep them all happy when they're in the same class and they're all highly recruited guys?
Absolutely. That is a critical point. And we were, our numbers were so bad, so low, we had all those scholarships sort of sitting on the shelf. Well, we were going to let them sit there, so now you bring in the big numbers, and then you have a problem.
Right, the temptation is for the quick fix, but
yes,
the recruiting problems that, you know, were hatched over several years take a long time to correct.
This is why programs are difficult to manage. You can shoot up and down. Teams get good, and then they're bad again, or then they're good, and then they're bad again. But to stay good over time is very difficult. Building a program is harder than getting a team
right
to play well.
So notice how effortlessly I do this. See, this is Davey and Willingham's fault.
Without a doubt.
You see how effortless that was?
God, you dine on Davey Ham that long, you're going to have some indigestion.
Yes, there's some truth in that.
Put that on a pillow.
Okay. All right, next topic. You know, it normally we would be talking about midweek, the polls coming out, the BCS standings and bowl implications, and we're not really in the mix this year, so it's a kind of an odd position to be in. But that having been said, who would you root for in this crazy season where South Florida's number two? I mean, anybody on their bandwagon? Who do you want to see in the championship game or in the BCS, given that none of it has any implications for Notre Dame, which is usually how we look at it?
Well, I don't know that none of it has implications for Notre Dame. We've been trained since very young, and we train our kids to look at every game. The kids ask, who do you root for here, Daddy? And you say, well, if Michigan wins, it'll make Notre Dame look better because Michigan beat us so badly. I mean,
it's crazy.
I got 10 and 12-year-old kids who already think that way. But if you pretend for a moment that you're not going to think that way, and really look at it and say, who do you like? There's a little bit of me that kind of thinks South Florida crashing the party and just destroying things, not because I like them, right, but because I want to bring down the system,
but
and I want a playoff system.
But South Florida won't bring down the system because they're in the Big East and at least have that credibility to them. Utah brings down the system. Boise State brings down the system. I don't think South Florida breaks the system, and I don't want to see another power rising in the state of Florida.
I don't know.
Well, I would say I wouldn't want to see a power rising in the state of Florida if the other Florida powers were still strong. I think South Florida's rise is corresponding to Miami falling off and Florida State falling off. Florida is strong right now for right now under Meyer, but I'm with you, Ed. I thrive on chaos in these situations because we have a system that is wired to hurt Notre Dame at its very core.
We've got another one.
It is so difficult. It is more difficult, contrary to what the haters will have you believe. Notre Dame really has to earn its position in the BCS. In the BCS, every year it gets it just a little bit harder and a little bit harder and a little bit harder. When you have a four-loss Florida State team or a three-loss Purdue team or whatever playing in a BCS game, That's what people should be complaining about. So anything that exposes this system for being the ridiculous, kludged together piece of crap that it is, I'm all for. So there's nothing I would love to see more than a South Florida versus Boston College Sugar Bowl for the national championship, and the place has
right, but here we are again. Okay. He's saying that right. Because of his Notre Dame perspective.
Is there a way to look at this from a Notre Dame fan's point of view? I don't think it's possible
hard.
To look at it without thinking, okay, well, what does this really do for our recruiting and the overall?
I want to be on the record that I'm trying. On November 3rd, I'm going to be at Dyke Stadium watching Iowa play Northwestern, a game that has no Notre Dame implications, and I'm actually going to try to watch the game and enjoy it. And
well, from that standpoint,
I'm trying to improve.
I'd like to see a Big Ten team win it. We're Midwest people, certainly better than a dang Florida team.
See, this is just Southern
team.
I don't think it's possible to really. Why I didn't really want to talk about the BCS and the polls because we're not involved.
Well, you know,
and a Purdue fan listened to the show and just ripped us for being arrogant. That if it didn't involve Notre Dame, we weren't all that interested in it. Hey,
it's a Notre Dame show.
Well, anyway,
Purdue education working.
I just think that it's really impossible to objectively get behind one team or another who's in the mix without looking at the implications for us, whether it be recruiting. Overall perception, whatever the case may be. I can't do it.
And part of it is I'd root for South Florida because, they're in the Big East, and I realize Notre Dame football is not in the Big East, but the rest of the sports are. So there's a small part of me that has that affinity. And coupled with that is I would rather be dragged over broken glass than see a Big Ten team win anything. So I just can't.
I know you said
set it aside, but I can't.
Yeah, I wouldn't. Boston College doesn't. Their fans bug the heck out of me. I actually liked, from what I saw, I like this football team. I like how they play.
Yeah, I have to say, that's a tough one because until 93, I was okay with Boston College. That's when I really, became a BC hater and some of the things that happened after that. But, a Catholic school, East Coast, not a Florida or West Coast team.
High graduation rates.
Exactly. There's some good things there.
Okay, so grudgingly we'll...
You know what? This was a grand experiment, but it failed.
Okay.
We can only see things in terms of Notre Dame.
Okay. All right. Now, other things happening in college football. Nebraska seems to be in an absolute free fall right now. And interesting, early season, the talking heads on ABC and ESPN talked about how Nebraska's got this thing turned around, and Bill Callen's got his people there, and really got this West Coast offense going. He may not survive the season.
Not with their AD getting launched. What they did was they Pearson was fired. Tom Osborne, I guess, is the interim athletic director while their president interviews folks. And the reason that they're doing that. Granted, you can't have your AD slot be empty, but the writing on the wall there is they're going to replace Callahan sooner rather than later, and they're not going to wait around for the AD position to be filled before they do it. So they've brought Osborne in to oversee that job search while the president finds their new athletic director.
Interesting. I wonder if Turner Gill over at Buffalo as
a
Nebraska guy is doing
a night.
Yeah, it's early in his coaching career, took over a real difficult situation. They're clearly showing some improvement at Buffalo, and you wonder if it's too soon. Is it Turner Gill's time? Is it too soon for him? That will be interesting. And how about this for a segue? Turner Gill coaches Mike Brayson, out at Buffalo. Mm-hmm. So let's talk a little bit about Irish basketball here as the season just gets started with first practices over the weekend. Boy, I think there's something to be excited and optimistic about is the progress of this program and the guys that we're going to throw on the court this year.
Well, historically, there has been a yin and yang to Notre Dame football and Notre Dame basketball. So the best news for Mike Bray is what's happening to Charlie Weiss. But I am excited about the basketball season because there's some great things happening. Having McElarney back and some kids who just grew up last year, I think, and played great. And I'm very excited about this year.
I think the key to the season is going to be how they replace production out of the small forward slot. I think from a scoring perspective, McElarney is going to do that because you have Torrey Jackson who is faster than Chris Thomas was and can finish like Torian Jones. And when you have that at your point guard, a guy who not only can drive the lane but find the open man as a result. I mean,
his
performance against Georgetown was nothing short of just amazing.
Yeah, Torrey Jackson's a complete package of point guard. Can penetrate and finish.
I think he needs to improve.
Can find people in the
offense.
Improve
on his threes a little. That's what I'm looking for.
I was going to get to that. I mean, he just has to be serviceable from the perimeter with the other guys we have. But here's where I think he's the complete point guard that we haven't had in a long time. He could play defense.
Absolutely.
Against guards in the Big East.
Right.
Torrey Jackson
Thomas
is a force.
Didn't too.
You know, Quinn couldn't, Thomas didn't, and we haven't had a guy who can really shut down the opponent's point guard. And I think Torrey Jackson is that kind of guy.
And the other thing is I think Kyle McElarney's defense is better than you would think of just from looking at him, where as opposed to when you were depending on someone like Chris Quinn to shut down a fast point guard, now you're asking McElarney, who's a little bit faster than Quinn, to play a shooting guard who isn't necessarily going to be as quick, isn't going to blow
yes,
by
matchup,
you.
Yes, matchup.
But whereas Colin Falls at least gave you a little length defensively as a guy who was 6'5", and McElarney's going to have some matchup problems with bigger shooting guards who maybe can take him down low. I mean, McElarney lacks a little height. But from an offensive standpoint, I like what he gives you.
I'd take McElarney's quickness on defense. Colin Falls, who I love, big heart, but I think he didn't
have... Physically limited.
Yeah,
I agree with you, but at least he was a guy that was 6'5", is all I'm saying.
Well, yeah, we'll have another guy at the three. He'll be, so you'll start out with Ryan Ayers, who's 6'5", 6'6", good
right.
wingspan. The guy who I'll be interested to watch is the freshman Tyrone Nash, who
must be really long and athletic.
He's got a Big East body already. The kid is cut. He did prep school last year, so he's a year older than your average freshman. The other kid I want to watch in the freshman class is Carlton Scott, who, as I've said, like on five different places now, has arms as long as my legs. The guy just has an unbelievable wingspan and can. I've watched the kid dunk, and he's got presence on the court.
I understand that the kid from Connecticut they like a lot, the freshman.
Timmy Abramidis. He's definitely in the Carroll / Falls mode, but I think he's capable of contributing. But with them probably only getting one recruit in this class, I think how Ayers and Nash proceed is going to depend on whether or not Abramidis gets a red shirt or not.
And of course, Luke Zeller's younger brother was on campus this past weekend as one of the top people in the country, one of the top 15 prospects in the country, and Notre Dame is on his list of Final Four.
Well, I heard he's leaning away from us.
I haven't heard that.
I would, my guess is he ends up at Purdue, especially with the problems that Samson
had. So he did not have a good weekend?
I don't think it's a question of not having a good weekend, but I think it's a question of he really likes Painter. I think he's comfortable. I think
that's too bad.
This coming week he'll be at Purdue, and we're going to find out real soon after
that. Yes, we will.
On the post. How are we going to be on the post?
You got to love what we got coming.
Herngood has lost like 20 pounds, I heard.
He hasn't lost any strength, and he's gained quickness, and he's starting to do more stuff with his right hand. I think he is progressing the way we would love to see a player like that progress, and by this time next year, we're going to be talking about an all-Big East
player. Herngood, Hillsland, you got to like, and Zeller, you got to like the guys we have down there, and we'll see how the freshmen are integrated into that, which guys can step up and play in the Big East in a hurry. But it should be a great season. So we'll have more on Notre Dame basketball clearly as we get into the season. But we're going to wrap it up there for today. We'll be back on Thursday with a look at the SC game coming up. Of course, let's not forget about the game this week, ND and Southern Cal. Until then, I'm Mike Sullivan for Mike Coffey and Ed Sullivan. You've been listening to Dome and Domer. We'll see you next time.